It's hour number three of Midday with Trey and PK. Coming up this hour at 12:50, we cross talk with Rod Babers ahead of the Rodcast. At 12:30, we're talking college football with Joel Klatt of Fox. And in a few minutes, XFL Commissioner Oliver Luck joins the show. I'm Trey Elling, Brad Kellner next to me here in Frisco, Adam Wagner back at the Horn Studios in Austin. You can text us. The Specs text line is 337-3776. Give us a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, at Brad Kellner, and at Not the Fake Wags. And we want to give a special thanks, because we are here at Big 12 Media Days here at the Star in Frisco, to our sponsors today. A special thanks to Midday Show specific sponsors. That would be Audio Visual Consultations, also Lone Oak Motors, and also a thanks to Reliable Automotive for sponsoring this entire bit here that our station is at over the next couple days, BK.
No doubt. We're really grateful, really thankful to be here. Now, Matt Campbell, the head football coach of Iowa State, up at the podium right now here at Big 12 Media Days. Iowa State, man, what a surprise year. Making a bowl game last year, winning seven games, of course. Maybe the shock of the entire college football season, going into Norman, Oklahoma as a 30-point underdog and beating Oklahoma outright in Norman, the only loss for the Sooners up until the college football playoff. People started to take notice of Iowa State late in the Big 12 schedule when Kyle Kemp took over at quarterback. He is back for year six. I would argue that Texas got pretty lucky in their timing of when they played Iowa State, because Kemp was not the starting quarterback yet.
And crazy Nick Cage was.
Yeah, exactly. Long-haired Nicholas Cage was running the show. But Iowa State not getting a whole lot of love. They're projected to finish seventh in the Big 12 Conference this year, which maybe for them is good. Maybe for them is higher than a little bit than usual. But Matt Campbell's got higher aspirations, man, and a lot of people think he's only going to be in Ames, Iowa for a couple of years with how much success he's had to this point. And the fact that he's still in his 30s, he's done a great job in his short time up at ISU.
And he did have opportunities to leave Ames to go to other college football coaching gigs this last offseason, and he chose to stick around at Iowa State. He thinks that some special things are in store for Cyclones fans coming up. And despite the fact that they did lose some key pieces, Joel Lanning, who of course has been the heart and soul of this team on both sides of the football at some point in the last couple of years, he is no longer a part of the Cyclone squad. They do have one of the more talented running backs in the Big 12 and David Montgomery too.
No doubt.
To go along with Kyle Kemp. And even though they lost the talented Alan Lazard on the outside, he's playing in Jacksonville now. They do have another very talented wide receiver, cut in a similar mold, maybe not quite as bulky, but Hakeem Butler has the potential to be a special player on the outside for the Cyclones.
Really, really good player for Iowa State. So it'll be interesting to see. Of course, Iowa State, the fourth team represented today for Big 12 Media Days. You've got five today: TCU, Kansas, Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Oklahoma. And then Texas Longhorns will be tomorrow with West Virginia, Baylor, K-State, and Oklahoma State. Trey, we talked about this a little bit last hour. You don't see Oklahoma as a team that can compete. I don't want to say compete, but you don't see Oklahoma as a team that's going to be represented in the Big 12 championship at the end of the year. And we talked a little bit about Texas, right? Texas was picked by the media to finish fourth in the preseason poll. They did actually get one first-place vote. Got to assume it was like Anthony Geronimo or somebody who covers Texas and is a little bit too positive about this team year after year after year. But still, Texas, I think media who cover the Big 12 are kind of like us, kind of in wait-and-see mode. Like, they're so tired of picking this to be the year that Texas comes out of its shell and becomes a power once again. So local media and Big 12 media not giving the horn some love, but Phil Steele's magazine has Texas the number 10 team in the country and making a New Year's Six Bowl, playing in the Fiesta Bowl against Boise State. You've got Athlon Sports, which I've got in front of me. They have Texas going to the Big 12 championship game, playing Oklahoma there. Joel Klatt, who we'll talk to hopefully at about 12:30, 12:35, a couple of months ago, he tweeted out his very early conference championship winner projections, and he has Texas winning the Big 12 conference. So the national media is seeing something that apparently Big 12 and local media aren't seeing. For you personally, I know you're around the 9-win mark for Texas, but your thoughts on what Texas has to do? Do we have a guest right now?
Give me just 1 second. I'm going to have you talk for a second, because they just called the backup line, which is my cell phone versus the hotline.
Oh boy! All right, well, I'll continue this conversation then. Some Texas football. You know, for me, if you were listening to the show last Thursday while Trey was out of town, I did a solo show. You know, this is a boom or bust year for this Texas football program, and this I don't know if I've ever seen since my time covering or being a fan of Texas football, but maybe going to college football teams around the country. I'm not sure I've ever seen a team with such a wide range of projections when it comes to win-loss record. I mean, you've got people who think, well, it's just going to be another Texas year. It's going to be another 6-7 win type of year for the Longhorns. That's sort of where I'm at on the bust side of the spectrum. But there's a lot of projections, including the things that I just mentioned. Texas has the second-best Vegas odds as well to win the Big 12 here in 2018. A lot of people think this could be the year for the Longhorns, sort of a boom year for Texas football. I don't remember a year with such a wide range of win-loss projections for this team. You know, everyone's in wait and see mode, but no one's entirely sure what we're waiting to see with this Texas football team. You know, despite my pessimism that you've heard on this station for weeks now, for months now, I can't sit here and tell you there's no scenario in which Texas can win 8, 9, maybe even 10 games and be in competition for the Big 12 championship when it's all said and done. They've got experience. If you go too deep on the quarterback depth chart, Texas has more experience at quarterback than any team in the conference in terms of combined starts by the quarterback room with Sam Ellinger and Shane Buechel. You've got experience and depth seemingly at every position on the football field, both sides of the ball, even the offense, which was terrible last year. They're still, you know, you got a grad transfer and a couple of juniors and experience at the running back spot. The wide receivers, a very experienced group. The offensive line, as bad as they were last year, well, you've got a lot of guys coming back. You've got a grad transfer, Calvin Anderson, coming over from Rice, who's already started 35 games in his college career. You've got depth there. I don't think too many people have questions about the defense for Texas with what we saw from Todd Orlando in year one, and maybe more specifically what we saw in the bowl game with no Malik Jefferson, Holton Hill, Puna Ford, Deshaun Elliott. With all those dudes being gone, the fact that the Texas defense was still able to show out incredibly well against a Mizzou offense that was really the best offense statistically in the entire SEC a year ago, I think people are bought in. But there's depth, there's experience at every position on the field except for maybe punter, and if guys stay healthy, and Sam Ellinger, Shane Buechel, whoever wins the quarterback job, if that guy can take a step and be smarter with the football, and this Longhorn team can get some semblance of a running game, I don't think those are too much to ask. If all of that works for Texas, this can be a team that competes for the Big 12 this year.
Your skepticism is totally understandable, BK, and for me it really revolves around what they can get out of the offensive line. They don't need a stellar offensive line. They need an offensive line that is average to above average at times. If they can get that, they can establish a little bit of a ground game to set up the play action for either Ellinger or Shane Buechel, then I think this is a Texas offense that's going to finally carry its own weight, which is something that we have not seen for a long, long time around these parts now. All right, let's shift focus now from Texas football to a different brand of football. That's the XFL. We're joined now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline by Oliver Luck, former athletic director at West Virginia. He is also formerly the executive vice president for regulatory affairs with the NCAA. And now, as of a little bit more than a month ago, he is the commissioner for the XFL. Oliver, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Trey and BK, I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Oliver. Just to let you know, we're actually broadcasting live from Big 12 Media Days right now. Of course, you have attended a couple of these in your lifetime. Any fond memories from coming to Dallas for Big 12 Media Days?
Well, I only have fond memories of, you know, my time as the West Virginia AD when we made the move from the old Big East into the Big 12. And, you know, those first couple, 3 years were just extraordinarily fun, you know, for our fans to get to know Austin and you know, all the other marketplaces in the Big 12 was awesome. I still remember our first game at the stadium against the mighty Longhorns. We had, you know, pretty explosive bunch on offense at West Virginia at that point. Geno Smith and Tavon Austin, and it was quite a shootout. The whole thing's been a great experience, I think, certainly from, you know, during my 3 years or so at WVU when we were a member of the conference in the early years. A lot of fun.
Absolutely. And Oliver, you've had a little bit more than a month now to get your bearings on the new job as commissioner for the XFL. In that time, what have you determined to be your biggest goals in terms of making sure that the XFL gets off on the right foot when play gets going in 2020?
So the big challenge that Vince McMahon has given me, and Vince is a huge football fan and is really devoting a lot of capital to this project, but the big challenge he's given me is he wants us, the XFL leadership, to reimagine the game of football. And, you know, if you start to think a little bit about what reimagine means, it becomes very interesting. So you look at it in these terms. you know, football is a very popular game, right? The number one sport in the United States. A lot of us love it, respect it, et cetera. But the game has been sold effectively to the major broadcasters and other commercial entities. And as such, all the things that people complain about, you know, the game lasts for 4 hours, but there's only 15 minutes of action, right? There's lots of breaks, you know, all the whether the TV timeouts or coaches' timeouts, the game doesn't flow, you know, as it should. And I know players and coaches complain about that, both at the NFL and at the major college level. So Vince has said, listen, reimagine the game and see if we can't maintain that same fast pace, the same, you know, high number of plays, the same excitement, but limit all those things that folks are complaining about, right? You know, so we're gathering a number of coaches, former players, folks who are in the sport tech, you know, business, and we're trying to reimagine the game and question all of those things that that have been taken for granted as part of the game. For example, something very simple. You know, do we really need to have quarter breaks in football? Do professional football players, set aside the college players, but do professional football players, professional athletes need a quarter break? Or is it really just an opportunity for, you know, 60 seconds or 120 seconds of advertising? So we're looking at all the issues, the rules of the game. We're looking at the administrative aspects of the game to try to have a fast-paced game that's exciting, that flows much better than sort of the game today. And quite honestly, that's not a four-hour experience. We want to hopefully get it down to where it used to be when I was playing, you know, college and professional football, which is, you know, less than 3 hours. That's a fun task, right? Anybody who really cares about the game and enjoys watching the game, I think would be sort of fascinated to be able to have that opportunity. And Vince has challenged myself and our staff to do that. And that's really probably the biggest sort of challenge we have right now, is trying to reimagine this game. And we believe if we can do that, that we can find a nice niche, you know, in the springtime. We're not going to compete against the NFL. The NFL's about to celebrate its centenary, 100 years of professional football. It's the most powerful, you know, league really in the world, and it's the envy of every other sports league around the world. But I think we can be a nice complement to the NFL in those spring months when, you know, there is a little void that's left in amongst football fans.
My broadcast partner was just asking you about what it was that really drew you over to the XFL, something that took you from the seat that you were holding with the NCAA into the XFL.
Well, you know, it's not often that there's an opportunity to build a professional football league, or for that matter, a professional sports league, you know, from the ground up. And the fact of the matter is that Vince McMahon, as I had mentioned, is a guy who just loves the game. Is very excited about the game, is putting some serious dollars into the game, making a significant financial commitment to the game, and he's asked me to be the sort of lead architect, if you will, of this, and that was an opportunity that I just couldn't pass up. I've admired Vince from a distance. You know, he's built a remarkable empire, you know, in professional wrestling with WWE, and so it was just an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. Like, you know, millions of other folks around the country, I really enjoy football, although I do realize that, you know, the game is facing many challenges, not the least of which is the, you know, the issue of head trauma, and we're going to try to do well by our players, do the right thing in terms of having the highest health and safety protocols for our players. But this was just a really neat opportunity and something I couldn't pass up because of my sort of passion for the game.
Now, the XFL is one of two spring football leagues that has been making headlines over the last 6 months or so. The other is the Alliance of American Football. They're actually starting in 2019. I think they start the week after the Super Bowl. Have you guys thought about a timeline of when you actually want the league to operate in terms of the regular season, and how much of that is going to overlap with the AAF?
Well, we will be launching in 2020, and I think which is smart because it gives us the time to really put all of our protocols in place and build this in a very methodical and professional fashion. and that's exciting for me. We will play in the spring, obviously, and you know, I would rather not comment on the other league. I don't know really their plans very well, but we're excited about the opportunities that we're going to have in 2020 in the eight markets where we will launch the XFL.
And I've just finished reading a review copy of Jeff Perlman's excellent book on the history of the USFL, which is up to this point maybe the most successful of the spring football leagues, and they've, of course, had their challenges. One of the things that they realize, I think, in retrospect, is they would have been better off going with less cities that actually had pro football franchises. How much of a thought have you gone or have you had in terms of where you're going to locate those franchises? And is a city like Austin in the running to possibly get an XFL franchise?
Well, we've sent out RFPs to over 30 cities, and we're in the process of collecting those RFPs and analyzing them. I would, you know, I've not read Jeff's book. I know he's a very respected journalist. I can remember, you know, as an Oiler, you know, back in the 80s, living in Houston, of course, and going to Gamblers games in the old Astrodome. And you know, Jim Kelly was playing for the Gamblers. A bunch of buddies of mine, you know, from my college days were playing with, you know, in the USFL. And they had some pretty healthy crowds, you know, 30, 35,000, good football, high quality of play. I think there were a number of franchises in the old USFL that were in NFL markets that did fairly well attendance wise. So I'd be curious to read Jeff's book, and I may not be accurate in that statement, but my recollection was their big mistake, of course, was trying to move the league to the fall and taking on the NFL. That was, I think, folly, quite honestly. Had they stayed in the spring, I think they very well could have, you know, made, you know, really built a long-term sustainable league. So I may quibble a little bit with Jeff's sort of analysis that you're better off in smaller markets than you are in as opposed to larger NFL markets. And you've got in cities like Houston or Dallas or you know, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, you have, you know, a proven group of folks who are very, very willing and have proven in the past that they're willing to go buy tickets and attend football games. That's I think, encouraging to us.
You're definitely right about the Houston franchise. I think Denver was one of the other exceptions as well. And one of the things for the Houston Gamblers is something that you talked about with Jim Kelly and just the slew of talent they had around him. That was really the inception of the run-and-shoot offense at the professional level, and something that you saw the Oilers franchise eventually adopt when the Gamblers went away, too.
That's right. You know, if you look at how the college game has developed over the last 30 years, I'll say a couple of things. Number one, I think there are more qualified college football players than ever before, both at the big and the smaller schools. You know, college football has improved dramatically in terms of weightlifting and film study and nutrition, and you know, the coaching has gotten better. So I think there is a deep pool of players that are out there. And there's also a deep pool of guys who are excellent college football players, all-conference performers, et cetera, but just aren't big enough, maybe just not fast enough to make it in the NFL. And that's a pool of players I think you can build a league around. You know, lots of quarterbacks, you know, that end up on NFL practice rosters who probably won't see much time in an NFL game, and then they're not getting any better, you know, running plays off of cards, right, mimicking that week's opponent. So I think there's an opportunity for us, you know, beginning in 2020, to really put a good product on the field, in large part because there, I think, is a very deep pool of fun, exciting players who, you know, just don't have quite that last little oomph to make it in the NFL. It's a, like, you know, like the NBA or Major League Baseball, it is hard, very hard, you know, to make it in the National Football League. And when you do, you know, you can look forward to an average career of maybe 3.5-4 years. So I think that, you know, we really have a nice opportunity to sign good football players who can play a high-quality game, get good coaching, and put a good product in the field. In fact, I think better than what the XFL was able to put out in 2001.
Oliver, you mentioned the XFL, the first rendition in 2001. I'm just curious, in your mind, and it feels like you guys have a great pulse of football fans, right, putting this league in the spring, not competing with the NFL, trying to shorten up some games, keeping the game safe.
Yeah.
You're saying a lot of great things, which a lot of football fans are excited for that product to come. But just in your opinion, some of the biggest challenges that are facing you personally and the XFL as a league as you guys try to have a more successful rebirth than the original product itself.
Well, you know, we're a startup, right? And, you know, folks in Austin are certainly familiar with lots of startups, you know, many of which become successful, some of which don't. But we're a startup, and I think when you're in that startup mode, the most important thing is to keep your focus on what really matters. And what we believe really matters is a good quality product, right, that we can deliver at a reasonable price to our fans. And that's important because we want to attract families. We want to be able to, you know, have a family of four attend a game and, you know, not have to pay through the nose, you know. And that's a fact, right? With most professional sports, let alone professional football in the NFL. So I think our biggest challenge as a startup is really to keep our focus on what matters, you know, to work diligently towards our launch date in 2020. And again, we have the time to really launch this, I think, appropriately, because as I guess your like grade school teachers used to say, you only have one chance to make a first impression. And our first impression that we want to make in 2020, we want to be an absolute positive impression. And that's super important. So we're all geared towards doing that. It's a long way away, you know, but when you're in that startup mode, you know, time flies by. So really, I think our biggest challenge is just making sure we're focused on making sure that our game can be very compelling, very fun, very fast-paced, with a high quality of play, because I think there are lots and lots, millions of football fans who do feel that void after the football season is over and aren't necessarily fans of baseball or basketball or some of the other sports. But, you know, we think we can build a long-term sustainable league in markets where people just want to watch football in the spring.
Just a couple more minutes with XFL Commissioner Oliver Luck. Nice enough to join us today to talk about this excellent new product that's coming your way in 2020, the spring of 2020. Oliver, one of the ways that the USFL, when it was launched, made waves in the general public and also in the news headlines was by signing a guy, Herschel Walker, out of Georgia, who wasn't yet eligible for the NFL. Are you giving consideration for having guys who aren't yet eligible for the NFL able to play in the XFL?
Well, it's something that we're talking about. We've not made any decisions, but I can say this, right? So the 3-year rule that everybody's familiar with in terms of football, sort of like the one-and-done rule in basketball, that 3-year rule is a result of the collective bargaining agreement between the National Football League Players Association, the union, and, of course, the NFL management, right? We're not subject to that collective bargaining agreement. So, you know, we would have the freedom, the ability, to take a guy out of high school or take a guy who's only played 1 year of college football or perhaps only 2 years of college football. So we have no constraints in that regard other than what the best approach would be. And having said that, I'll say also that we are very sensitive, I certainly am, you know, to the kind of concept or the notion that, you know, players are ready to play professional football, you know, coming out of high school. Not many guys in that position that are capable of doing that. You know, you think about Herschel Walker, you mentioned that. I can think of, like, Adrian Peterson, you know, perhaps coming out of Palestine High, you know, developed enough physically and, I think, mentally to play in the league. But those guys are few and far between. But it is something that we're going to look at. We're going to, you know, study that over the next 6 to 8 months and figure out if we want and think it's good for the league, if we want to be able to take away, we can, but if we want to be able to sign players coming out, you know, of high school or first or second year. So no decisions have been made, but it's certainly something that we're going to take a deep, long look at.
Oliver, a lot of people in Austin know your name, if nothing else, because you were one of the primary candidates for the AD job a couple years ago when Texas was looking to replace the lost Dodds. Unfortunately for myself and a lot of other Longhorn fans, the decision was made to go with Steve Patterson versus you. Do you ever have a moment where you think back of what could have possibly been had you been named the athletic director at Texas?
You know, not really, to be honest with you. I am a proud alumnus of the university's law school. lived in Austin for a number of years. You know, I have a lot of friends in Austin. I get back there probably four or five times a year. It's a remarkable city, a great university, the flagship of my favorite state in the nation. You know, and but I don't think about what may have been. I am a very good friend of Chris Del Conte. I think CDC is going to do a phenomenal job, you know, for not just Longhorn football, but all of Longhorn athletics. I think it'll be a great, you know, representative for the university. But I really historically haven't spent too much time lamenting what may have been.
Oliver, you played college and pro football. You served for the NCAA as the Executive Vice President of Regulatory Affairs. You're currently with the XFL. You're thinking about not having that age limit that the NFL does. I'm curious to know your thoughts on paying college athletes, specifically football and basketball players, not necessarily paying them out of the pockets of the schools that they're attending, but perhaps figuring out a better way to compensate these guys for name and image likeness. Are you on board with figuring out a better way to actually maybe get these guys a little bit more money in their pockets once their eligibility is over with?
Well, you know, the devil in all these discussions is really in the details. So, you know, I'm a firm proponent, you know, and supporter of amateur athletics. I also supported the cost of attendance, you know, sort of stipend that was put in place now, I guess, about 2 years ago, you know, which provided the full cost of attendance for a student athlete. And that, in effect, you know, meant a little bit more cash in the pocket of a football player or track player or, you know, swimmer, you know, the track athlete, whatever it would be. I think there are a number of people within college athletics, whether they're at the NCAA's national office or out on campus or in a conference, you know, who are thinking about other mechanisms, whether that be a group license that might be put in place. I think virtually everybody in college athletics, myself included, when I was working at the NCAA or working at West Virginia, I think we're all opposed to the idea of paying student athletes a salary, because then you'll have effectively minor league sports, poorly paid, poorly compensated athletes in minor league sports. So, you know, the devil's always in the details of how you structure it. But I do think there are folks who are trying to figure out, you know, how to maintain, you know, the amateur structure, but at the same time, you know, are willing to look at things that would ultimately benefit student athletes. There's a whole bunch of things that can be done in terms of additional scholarship opportunities. Trey and BK, why should a scholarship, an athletic scholarship, only be used for an undergraduate education? Why not provide a scholarship that covers a student's undergraduate as well as graduate education? One of the things that student athletes often complain about is that they don't really have the opportunity because of their sport to go on a, you know, semester overseas, or to go and, you know, to get involved with an internship that may take them away from campus, you know, for 2 or 3 months or every afternoon, you know, doing sort of a co-op type thing. Well, you know, there are ways to restructure sort of that scholarship to make sure that those student athletes actually have that opportunity to go spend a semester overseas or, you know, spend time at a co-op. Most kids don't want to do that because they'll lose their position on the team, right? So, you know, I think there are lots of folks that are looking at sort of creative ways to improve basically the situation of a student athlete. I would be opposed to paying a salary to student athletes, although I do think there are some ways where campus and conference and the NCAA national office, you know, could figure out how to improve, you know, the situation for the student athletes on campus. The key thing really is not to diminish the importance of the educational component of that student. That's really at the end of the day what needs to be emphasized, you know, time and time again, because that really is what sets, I think, our system of college athletics apart from what happens around the rest of the world. It's that a kid, young man, young woman is able to pursue his or her sport at the highest level, but also is able to get a world-class education at a school like the University of Texas. That's very special, and we don't want to sort of, you know, damage that in any form or fashion.
See, that scholarship idea, Oliver, is the sort of creative, outside-the-box thinking that has me believing that the XFL hired the right guy to lead their of that of that football league, and we think that there are good things on the horizon for the XFL, in large part because of you at the helm, sir. Thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it, and best of luck in your continued efforts to try and make the best possible football game possible for the XFL.
Thank you, Oliver.
Appreciate it, Trey. Appreciate it, BK. Take care.
You too. You
Take
too,
care.
Sir. Great stuff right there. Apologies for the technical difficulties we had, but it is what it is when you're on location, which we are right now. Lincoln Riley, head coach of Oklahoma, at the podium right now. If there's anybody going to give you some bulletin board or headline material, it's Lincoln Riley. The dude talks. He'll give you something. And considering Oklahoma's won the conference the last 3 years, he has the right to.
Yep.
All right, we're taking a break. Hopefully getting a chance to talk to Joel Klatt of Fox Sports next, talking some college football with him. If not, we'll do a little shooting the bull. We are live up here. Big 12 Media Days in Frisco, Texas. Many thanks to AV Consultations and Lone Oak Motors for getting us up here. We appreciate their support. We're here rocking and rolling till 1 o'clock. The Midday Show on the Horn.
Back here on the Midday Show, live from Big 12 Media Days in Frisco. We're at the Star. This is a very nice facility. We're very, very thankful to Reliable Automotive, also Audiovisual Consultations, and Lone Oak Motors for helping to sponsor this trip. Audiovisual Consultations and Lone Oak Motors are specific to the Midday Show. Thank you very much to Tom McKay and also Bart at Lone Oak Motors for helping to make that happen.
No doubt about it. All right, welcome back to the show. We will hopefully be talking to Joel Klatt of Fox Sports in a couple of minutes. He's wrapping up an interview with another radio station here up in Frisco, but Rod Babers is in the house. The Rodcast will take over from 1 to 3, giving you wall-to-wall coverage of all things Big 12 football media days. Lincoln Riley at the podium right now for Oklahoma. I did see a tweet, I think it was Brian Davis of the Statesman, who apparently Lincoln Riley said we haven't had the elite defensive talent that a lot of the programs across the country have had over the past couple of years. So we'll see. That's the biggest question mark with Oklahoma. When you have a guy like Baker Mayfield, a Heisman-winning quarterback, you're able to sort of overcome their lack of defensive success that they've had in the last few years under under Coach Stoops, as the left-behind Stoops, as he was called earlier today. But we'll see what kind of year it is for Oklahoma. For me, they're still the favorites to win this conference. They are the number one team, according to the Big 12 preseason media poll. I think they got 46 of the 52 first-place votes. You're not as high on the Sooners, Trey, as most people are. But for me, Kyler Murray's such a weapon, man. I mean, is he Baker Mayfield? No. Is he an elite college-level quarterback? Is his arm anywhere close to elite? No. I don't even know how much above average Kyler Murray's arm is as a quarterback. But all that he can do as a dual-threat player in the many snippets we got to see from him a year ago, that game against West Virginia in which Baker Mayfield was suspended. It was a serious punishment. He was suspended for like two plays in that Oklahoma game, but Kyler Murray had like a 75-yard touchdown run on that play. Like, he brings you that element to the table.
Yep.
And for me, Lincoln Riley is just such an offensive mastermind. I mean, we're sitting here in the Cowboys practice facility. If Jason Garrett screws up, which he's liable to do, and hopefully at some point he gets fired, Lincoln Riley is one of the first calls I want the Cowboys to make. Because
wow.
I am that sold on him as an offensive genius. Now, the head coaching acumen, we'll wait and see, right? It's only his second year as a head coach. Year one, he did a pretty damn good job. He won his conference, and he made it to the college football playoff. So I just think Lincoln Riley, with whatever you give him on the offensive side of the football, he's going to find ways to make lemonade from lemons. And Kyler Murray is a great weapon. He's such a unique aspect, such a unique character. He's got the ability to run the football and make things happen. They have Rodney Anderson and Trey Sermon in the backfield. Some great talent at the wide receiver spot with Hollywood Brown and C.D. Lamb. I just think this offense inevitably will take a little bit of a step back, but I still think they're going to put up some pretty ridiculous numbers this year that every Big 12 defense outside of Austin and Fort Worth are going to have trouble stopping.
I don't know about the ridiculous numbers. I think they are going to put up good numbers, but I don't think that is going to balance out well enough with just how porous the defense is going to be. And I could foresee a change at DC at some point early to midway through the year, maybe after the Texas OU game, if something goes sideways for the Sooners in Dallas, that they do replace Mike Stoops with who's the cat that Lincoln Riley brought in with him to serve as a quality control, like assistant head coach. He was with him at Texas Tech. Anyhow, that guy is waiting in the wings for when Mike Stoops ultimately stumbles, like he's going to do. It's not just us that thinks that. It's Sooners fans that believe so as well. They know that Mike Stoops is there in large part because of nepotism. And No, it's not Bob Diaco. Hold on, let me find this now. But anyhow, Oklahoma is going to come back down to earth a little bit. It's inevitable when you lose the caliber of talent that you have on the offensive side of the ball, and that's specific to one dude. Baker Mayfield was one of the best college football players in the last, 10 to 20 years, yeah, in terms of just finding ways to make sure his team wins football games. And it's very difficult to replace that, even with a guy who is as good with his legs as Kyler Murray is, even with a guy who can scheme offensively like Lincoln Riley can't. I think there's just going to be a natural step back that requires the other side of the football or other individuals on the offense to pick up the slack. I just don't believe that's going to happen for OU. They're still going to win probably 9 games, but I don't foresee them in the Big 12 championship as of right now.
That would be a shock. That would be a shock for me and for a lot of people.
Yeah,
absolutely. But we've talked about it on this show, and anybody who covers any team in the Big 12 conference, this is one of the most open years that I can remember in terms of, well, there's so many teams that have a chance. I mean, nobody really knew. Like, everybody assumed Oklahoma was going to be the preseason number one pick by the media, partially because they've won this league 3 years in a row. But from 2 to 7, you could argue from 2 to 8, no one was really quite sure what that order was going to be. And that just shows you, you know, we talk about there's no parity in the NBA. The Big 12, I know Oklahoma's been at the top, but this year it seems like this could be a year where there's going to be 5 or 6 teams, maybe even 7 or 8 teams, that are playing in that Big 12 championship game when it's all said and done. Every team's got questions to answer. There's no clear-cut favorite. You know, the best player in this conference is maybe Will Grier, who had a really solid year, but he's only been with West Virginia for one season. Yeah. He's not really a Heisman contender, in my opinion. I don't think there's a legit college football playoff contender in this conference, so it almost seems like it's more up for grabs than it's ever been.
It does feel like a little bit of a crapshoot. It's why you're not hearing strong arguments out of anybody, or you're not hearing, I guess, huge objections from people that are choosing to put a TCU or a Texas into the Big 12 championship game, because this feels like the year where that could happen, because there are so many question marks for every team across the board, including Oklahoma, that has dominated this conference for how many years now?
Right, no doubt. All right, should we break now and try to time this out with Joel Klatt? Not 100% sure he's going to make it over here. We were told he would.
Let's take
a break. If we can't get Joel, our man Rod Babers is in the house. We'll do our normal crosstalk and see what Rod's got in store on the Rodcast from 1 to 3. We will wrap up our Monday coverage, at least this show's Monday coverage, from Big 12 Media Days up in Frisco. Once again, thanks to AV Consultations and Lone Oak Motors for making it all possible. We'll be right back. One segment to go. Midday with Trey and BK. You're listening to The Horn.
Final segment of the Midday Show, live from Big 12 Media Days in Frisco. We're pleased to be joined right now by one of the main guys over at Fox covering college football. He is Joel Klatt. Joel, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing very well, Joel. And let's start with a comment that really made waves in Austin that you had a couple months ago, where you had visited, I think, Tom Herman and the Longhorn football program during spring practice, and you were a big-time buyer of UT and what they're capable of in 2018. Do you still feel that way?
Absolutely. I think they're a better football team than they were a year ago. And a year ago, they were a whisper away from, you know, 9-10 victories. A whisper. I did one of the games. You know, that USC game, they were right there. So you get some experience from quarterback, and experience to me means that you make better decisions. That's what experience gives you. It doesn't give you more talent. Doesn't give you more accuracy. You make better decisions with experience, and those turnovers specifically were more about decision making than they were anything else. So I think that you can pretty easily predict Texas to have a better year than they did a year ago. I'm a big believer that what they have built is sustainable, and it's really quality. I've been down there for about 3, 4, maybe 5 springs in a row. It was just palpably different this time. The level of player, the energy around the program, and ultimately that's what kind of led me to believe that I think Texas is a legitimate contender in this league. They're not going to be my favorite to win the league because OU is still more talented than they are. But Texas is catching up. There's no doubt about that. And I think that they could have a really good year and be right in the thick of things.
Joel, what's your thoughts on Tom Herman? Obviously, if you feel Texas can get back to relevancy this year, you must feel pretty good about him. But it's been three coaches, the end of Mack Brown, Charlie Strong, now Tom Herman, 8 years in a row in which this Texas football program is underachieved. You know, what makes you think that Tom Herman is the right guy to turn this program around?
Well, for one, I would say that last year they overachieved. Based on where they were, what they had to work with, and Tom is just different. I think that the energy around the program is different. Their ability to play harder, they just played harder this last year, and that I think that is a direct correlation to your head coach. Teams with great head coaches give maximum effort all the time. And you see that with Ohio State. You see that with Alabama. You saw that with Oklahoma under Bob Stoops and then now under Lincoln Riley. You see that with Iowa State and Matt Campbell. I mean, great leaders of men get the best effort from those men. And that's what I see. You know, I mean, it was just a different effort level on the field. Texas did not have that effort level. Under Charlie, and they do under Tom, and I think he's done some great things schematically as well.
Now, you believe that Oklahoma is going to win another Big 12 championship this year, at least playing in the title game?
Yeah, it's hard not to at least say, hey, they've got a great chance to be in the title game, because they do. I think they're the most talented team. I think that they have the ability. Their offense could, for me, remind me a lot of what Baylor was a few years ago under Art Briles, which was really a run-first offense with the ability to be potent passing the football. Mm. With Kyler Murray at quarterback, which I believe will be the quarterback, and then those two backs, Trey Sermon and Rodney Anderson, they could be the kind of preeminent run-rushing team in the country. Outside of, you know, Air Force and Army and Navy. And right. I mean, they could run the football for 265, 270 a game. Because they still have the ability to take the top of the defense. You can't help with safeties. Their quarterback is dynamic. They've got two backs. They can throw it to Rodney Anderson. Grant Calcaterra is a really good tight end. They got C.D. Lamb. Their offensive line is very good. I mean, very good. Probably best offensive line in the conference. It's hard not to look at them and say they can protect their defense with their run game, and they're very potent. I know Baker Mayfield is gone, but right now, I mean, I think it would be a giant upset if they're not in Dallas playing for the Big 12 championship.
It feels like just because Baker Mayfield no longer being there and the type of player that he was, the transcendent type of player that he was, that the offense is inevitably going to take at least a little bit of a step back, which requires the defense to take a step forward. Do you have confidence in Mike Stoops and that the defensive players and being able to take that step forward to help Oklahoma get back into the title game?
Well, I think I would just phrase it differently. I think that the offense doesn't have to take a step back. The offense just has to look different.
Okay.
And I think that the offense could actually help the defense be better this year. So can the defense be better? Yes. Will it be all on their accord? Probably not. Again, it's the ability to run the football. They aren't going to have to lean on Baker as much. They aren't going to have to lean on third and eight quite as much, because I think they're going to be, like I said, one of the best rushing teams out there. Because of that, their defense should see less snaps, should be more fresh, should force more turnovers, should create more pressure, all of those things. So that's the domino effect that I kind of arrive at. I don't see it as necessarily a step back as much as it is a shift in the style of play that they're going to implement.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports lead college football analyst, joining us now. And Joel, the trendy, the sexy pick, if you will, to win the Big 12 this year is West Virginia. The media picked them going second, but a lot of people are high on this Mountaineers team. I'm just curious, less of West Virginia, but your thoughts on Will Grier as a quarterback. He's the preseason first team all Big 12 quarterback in this conference. There's not a whole lot of returning talent at the quarterback position. Will Grier is kind of the steadying force. How good can he in this Mountaineer offense be?
They're going to be really good. I think that they could rival what Oklahoma State was this last season because they're that potent on the outside. They've got a quarterback that can really deliver it. They've got an offensive-minded head coach that likes to take take risks and sling it around a little bit. Will's going to have a great chance to be right in the thick of things as far as personal awards. And a lot of that has to do with he's got stages early, he's got stages late that are big, that are marquee, that he can make a name for himself. And if you were telling me you've got to take $1,000 of your own money and you got to go to Vegas and you've got to bet on one Big 12 team this season to be at least 8-0 through eight games, West Virginia would be the team I'd put money on.
Wow.
Because look at the schedule, right? Tennessee's got a brand-new head coach.
Right.
North Carolina State's rebuilding a defensive line after, you know, they're, I feel like North Carolina State's going to take a step back. You favor them both in that game. And now you see them rolling into Austin in November 8-0 and maybe ranked third or fourth in the country. It's not that far-fetched. Everybody else has much more stringent tests early in their schedule in their first six games, five games. Certainly Texas does. Their first five or six games are somewhat of a gauntlet, to be honest with you. They're the exact opposite of West Virginia. If someone said, okay, now take $1,000 and bet on which team you expect to win their last five, I would say probably Texas.
Right.
Kind of those schedules flipped a little bit.
And if you have a dark horse team in this conference, who is it?
I think it's TCU. They play so well on the defensive side. They've got a quarterback in Shaun Robinson that is pretty dynamic with his feet, has the ability to run the football. I think that Darius Anderson is a really good back, and they were much different once he was out for the year. He hurt his foot against OU in a game that Gus and I called. So their ability to run the ball, their ability to play defense. Banigou, am I pronouncing that right?
You are,
yeah,
Banigou.
He's really good. He's really good. So absolutely a dark horse would be TCU. And then here we go, the same old, watch out for Kansas State.
Yep.
Five returning offensive linemen, returning quarterback, returning defense. They're going to win nine games.
They always do.
I know.
Seemingly under Bill Snyder, right? Well, Joe, we appreciate the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Good talking with you.
For 3 hours, so go get some lunch.
You
man.
Got
have
it. Have a good one.
We appreciate it. Joe Klatt, Fox Sports, joining us. We appreciate his time.
Thanks, Joe.
We are out of time. Speaking of time, Rob Babers, the Rodcast, will jump on next from 1 to 3. He is here, so the wall-to-wall coverage of Big 12 Media Days from Frisco will continue. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, the morning show as well and Rod Show, so Texas Day. The Longhorns will take the podium tomorrow. But that's it. Thanks to all of you for texting and listening. Thanks to all of our great guests today for the Marine, the Fantasy Sports Guru, Adam Wagner, making it happen back in the studio for the Sultan of Cynicism, the Vomit King, Trey Elling here. I am BK. We'll be back to get a pop at the same time tomorrow. Until then, let bygones be bygones. You go and get the hell on. You and your mama. We out of here.